Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We thank you for listening to AFR. This is a live news and analysis program here for the next hour and 25 minutes. And joining me to co-host today is Walker Wildman. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Glad to be on the show today.
Fred Jackson.
Yes, sir. We're here.
And in studio with us is Ray Pritchard.
Yes, good morning, sir. Ray. How are you, Tim? Good to see you.
Now, you're normally with us in
from Kansas City. From Kansas City, right.
Drove down yesterday, did you?
No, Sunday.
Oh, did you drove down Sunday?
Yeah.
How far is it from Kansas City, Kansas to Tupelo, Mississippi?
I can tell you it's about 10 hours.
Is it a 10-hour?
It's about 10 hours with maybe three stops along the way, you know.
What do you go through? Springfield, Little Rock, Memphis, and here?
And then Jonesboro.
You go through Jonesboro?
Yeah. You just come winding through the mountains to get down to Jonesboro.
And it winds.
And it winds, yes.
I've done that.
Yeah. We've been to Branson many times.
Sure.
Once you get within 50 miles of Branson, there's no good way.
That's right.
That's to weave through those Ozark Mountains.
That's right. There's just mountains everywhere.
Yeah,
right?
You just got to do the best you can there. But it's good to have you in studio,
Thank you,
brother.
Good to be here.
All right. Much to discuss today on the program, and we're glad that that is so. Otherwise, we don't have a show. I guess we'd play some Christmas music, which may make everybody happy. But we do have a lot to discuss out of Washington, D.C. in particular, right, Fred?
Yes. Just in the last hour, folks, calling it a solemn act, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, along with a few friends, mm-hmm. Gerald Nadler, Adam Schiff.
She gets by with a little help from these people.
With a little help from those people.
Who's the blonde lady? Excuse me for interrupting. I'm looking at the picture on Fox News.
I'm not sure. She's not a Republican for sure.
Okay. I'm just looking at a photograph from Fox News, mm-hmm. which has the Island of the Misfits. their picture there. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, she was joined by Gerald Nadler as they formally announced two articles of impeachment against President Trump, what they call an abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. Those were the two articles they came up with.
Obstruction of Congress, how?
President Trump disagreed with what they were doing. So they believe that it's obstruction of justice.
Now, what happened to the... What happened to the charge of bribery? Has that just disappeared?
That disappeared out of the Democrat dictionary, as did quid pro quo. That disappeared. Bribery. And there was one more, too, that kind of disappeared.
Because that's where they really started, right? With the phone call to Ukraine. And now that's just disappeared.
It's all disappeared, but they're very solemn. Mm. Gerald Nadler, here's a little bit of Gerald Nadler. It's going to be cut number one, Brent, in his solemn tone this morning announcing the articles of impeachment.
Today, in service to our duty to the Constitution and to our country, the House Committee on the Judiciary is introducing two articles of impeachment charging the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, with committing high crimes and misdemeanors. The first article is for abuse of power. It is an impeachable offense for the president to exercise the powers of his public office to obtain an improper personal benefit while ignoring or injuring the national interest. And when he was caught, when the House investigated and opened an impeachment inquiry, President Trump engaged in unprecedented, categorical, and indiscriminate defiance of the impeachment inquiry. This gives rise to the second article of impeachment for obstruction of Congress.
And there you have it. And the president has already responded to all of that, saying basically this is sheer political madness.
Yeah, I've actually never heard of anything called obstruction of Congress.
Me either. I'm glad it happened.
I've heard obstruction of justice.
The best news of the day.
Yeah, but you know that there's no such thing as obstruction of Congress because they're two separate branches.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not a legal proceeding. As remember early on, they said this is not a legal proceeding, mm-hmm. meaning there's no due process. That's what the Democrats were saying. Mm-hmm. So how can you obstruct that which is not a legal proceeding?
Right.
Yes.
And so this is they don't like President Trump.
And don't presidents obstruct Congress all the time when they
yes.
disagree?
Yes.
Doesn't that happen with every
yes.
president, right?
Yeah, yes. President Obama, you know, remember Fast and Furious?
Yes.
Our own ATF agency was selling guns to the cartels.
Uh-huh.
And those guns they lost track of.
Yes.
And they ended up in Paris.
That's right.
At the Bataclan mm-hmm. attack where dozens of people died. Mm-hmm. One of our guns were ended up over there. Congress wanted to investigate and get to the bottom of it. Eric Holder, President Obama, wouldn't respond to one question from Congress.
No, I think President Obama invoked the
executive privilege. That's right.
So, yeah, the bar is, I don't even know if there's a bar anymore to impeach a president. And, in fact, you were telling me this morning, Fred, at our show meeting, that was it you telling me that somebody had, the gentleman from Louis Gohmert?
Yes.
Commented on that.
Yes.
Right. Do you have that clip?
Well, we have Gohmert and Nadler sparring with each other yesterday.
Okay.
But that was about the matter of one of the witnesses, though, for the Democrats, Barry Burke. He's a lawyer, was a witness, and then he moved chairs and became a prosecutor. This is unheard of. It's a good example of the kangaroo court environment that we
have seen. He started as a witness.
He started as a witness yesterday for the Democrats, got out, and he wasn't sworn in. They called him a witness, wasn't sworn in, and then he changes chairs and goes up on the dais and starts asking questions.
How is that not abuse of power?
Well, he also was serving coffee later in the afternoon.
He cleaned the room after everybody was gone, too.
Yeah. Hey, do you want to hear the Gohmert Nadler?
Yeah. So what are we about to hear? A sparring between Gohmert and Nadler?
And Jerry Nadler over this whole idea. Okay. How do you become? How can you be a witness and then become a prosecutor all within about an hour and a half? Cut number four.
There is no rule nor precedent for anybody being a witness and then getting to come up and question. And so
I have ruled
we would. The point of order is he's inappropriate to be up here asking questions.
That is not a point of order. He's here in accordance with rules.
And on and on and on it goes. Listen, let's go back to the very beginning of this, the so-called whistleblower. Remember, the Democrats changed the rules.
Right.
That's what they've been doing. They've been changing the rules. A whistleblower, formerly, you had to be witness to the actual
right.
act of which you're accusing someone. This guy was not.
Right.
This whistleblower was not. But the Democrats changed the rules on it. This has been just a total charade.
Well, we're going to have more later. Got two articles of impeachment. That'll have to be voted on by the House
Judiciary Committee. Full Judiciary Committee first votes it on. Probably this week. Next week, the full House.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens there because you do have somebody said how many
31
Democrats. You have 31 Democrat House of Representative members.
Yes.
Who are from districts that President Trump won in 2016.
Correct.
Right.
And they are nervous. Those people are nervous. They're being squeezed by their own party to vote for impeachment while at the same time having to consider their own political future because this could damage them and they could lose in November because they've sided with what we've read now in surveys, the independent voters in the U.S. Do not find the Democrats' case compelling enough to throw the president out of office.
Nope.
That's what surveys are showing.
That's
the bar
right.
from Richard
mm-hmm.
Dawson.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to talk about this. We've got more on this later. But first of all, You know, the Never Trump crowd, they raise their heads ever so often, especially some of our Christian brothers, and they tell us, you people voted for President Trump, so you are responsible for whatever he said on that day or something that happens in the administration that doesn't look good or isn't good, whatever. And so they'll say, see there, you're responsible, Wildman, and you're people who believe like you because you voted for this man into office. It's a tired old argument that's been refuted many times before, but yet it's coming up again, and I think it's coming up again from the Never Trump crowd because we got an election coming up in 2020, and they would rather see a Democrat win and then vote for Donald Trump. And so they want to tell us Christians that we are surrendering our faith if we support President Trump. Well, I have just the man lined up to refute this or to talk about this or to answer this objection that some people have. Dr. Frank Turek joins us from North Carolina. Good morning, Frank.
Well, it's about time. I was about to charge you with obstruction of a guest.
That's good right there. Yes, that was right. Good. Wasn't that good, Fred?
Create a charge.
Yeah, create a charge. Yeah. Well, you can appear before Jerry Nadler.
That's right.
All right.
Who, by the way, back in the Clinton years, was not for impeachment at all, as you know, despite the fact that Clinton was under oath when he lied. But anyway, that's old news.
Yeah. So. There's a lot of things I could say about Jerry Nadler back in that time period, but I'm not going to engage in those.
He was a big man.
He was Jabba the Hutt, is what he was. I'm sorry, but to his credit, you baited me on that, Ray.
I know.
I was going to say it, and then I wasn't going to say it, and then you said that, and then out it came.
What are friends for? Yeah.
So
that's why I brought Ray to Tupelo.
Yeah. That's right.
But let me just say, to his credit,
that's right.
Jerry Nadler lost a lot of weight, and so there.
He also lost some common sense with this move.
Duly noted. Now, I set it up for you there. Christians are what we sell in our soul when we support President Trump. Is that right?
Yeah, I always hear that. And actually, I did a podcast on this, a radio program on the American Family Radio Network over the weekend. And it was the title of the whole program was Why Did Evangelicals Vote for Donald Trump? And I came up with five reasons.
Go.
Okay, these are the five reasons. Number one, what was the alternative? There wasn't a good alternative, right? Trump was never got a majority of Christian votes in the primaries. There were 17 people to vote for. So the Christians had spread their votes across a lot of different people. So he never was the choice in the primaries. But after the primaries, what did you have? You had Donald Trump against Hillary Clinton, two unsavory choices for most Christians. The difference, however, was we knew at least Trump at least seemed to be more conservative and the platform was more conservative than was Hillary's platform. And politics is never done in a vacuum. You've got two choices. Jesus was not on the ballot. So who are you going to pick? In fact, my mentor, Dr. Norman Geisler, said this many years ago. This was before the 2016 election, Tim. Here's what he said. He said, elections are normally a choice between a known witch and a suspected devil. It came true in 2016, it seemed, didn't it? Anyway, so what was the alternative? What were people going to do? I know some people didn't vote. Some people voted in a third party. Fine, you want to do that? I just think you're throwing away a vote because nobody from a third party is going to win it in 2016. Nobody was going to write anybody in 2016. You had Clinton or Trump. Those were your choices.
No.
So that's reason number one.
Okay.
Reason number two is that people voted for a president, not a pastor. There's a difference between voting for a candidate and agreeing with everything a candidate does, right? I mean, I don't agree with everything Trump does. And I know people here on this panel don't either. But you had a candidate. And I wish Trump had more of the demeanor of a pastor, but he doesn't. What are you going to do? You're going up against Hillary Clinton's platform. So that was number two. Number three was policy Trump's demeanor. Policy Trump's demeanor. Personally, I give Trump an A- on policy and a D on demeanor. But I give Hillary Clinton an F on policy. It wouldn't matter what her demeanor was. It's not going to counterweight her policy. In fact, if I got a minute here, let me just give you a quick illustration. I always ask people, if you needed surgery, would you rather have a doctor who is a bad surgeon but has a good bedside manner, or would you rather have a good surgeon who has a bad bedside manner? And obviously, it's the second. Now, I wish my doctor had both, but if he doesn't have one or the other, he can have a bad bedside manner. I want him to do good surgery. So Trump is like a surgeon, a good surgeon with bad bedside manner.
He's more than just okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, like that commercial.
Yeah, am I the only one that's seen that commercial?
Right, that commercial. Right.
Guess who's been reinstated?
Well, not officially.
Yeah, I'm kind of scared, too.
All right. Continue on, sir.
The fourth reason I thought evangelicals voted for Trump was the judges. I mean, think about it. I mean, there's been two Supreme Court justices put on the court since Trump came in office, and 160 in lower courts. That changes the nation for a generation. Unfortunately, our government is typically ruled by judges. It shouldn't be that way, but that's the way it is. So judges are very important. And 5,000 people come along with a candidate. When you're voting for somebody, you're not just voting for the person at the top of the ticket. You're voting for 5,000 political appointees and other people that are going to come into Washington and affect policy. Now, the fifth reason, which is probably the longest reason I had to explain, was Trump fights important battles that other conservatives won't. Hmm. Now, we don't always agree with how he fights, but at least he fights. Trump is like the bully that shows up on the playground that beats up bullies who have been beating you up for the past 30 years. And you finally go, at least there's somebody here fighting for me. I don't agree with all his tactics, but he's fighting for me.
Yeah.
No, that's a very good point. That's a very good point. And all those reasons. By the way, where can we – I want to listen to that podcast. Where can you go and listen to that?
You can go to the AFA place where you guys have podcasts. You can go to the Cross Examine. I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist podcast. It's
and
all
by the
there.
Way, Dr. Michael Brown, our friend, has also written an excellent column basically outlining some of the same things that that Frank just said. You know, this is very important because we do need to have those – You know, we do need to have those questions settled in our own hearts, right, and in minds on why we voted for somebody, and to be reminded of that, of those reasons, because, and we were left with two choices. We went through a primary process that, and guess what? Christians alone can't elect a president. All right, Christians alone can't elect a president. So, like Ray and Fred, you to jump in here. So. Here's what I get tired of, and there aren't a whole lot of these people left out there, but what they do is they wait for President Trump to make a mistake in something that he says or does that we would find, not savory or not appealing or, you know, whatever.
Maybe even sinful.
Maybe even sinful. Right. And then they will say to us, see there, gotcha. You voted for him, therefore you support his behavior, therefore you compromised the gospel.
Yeah.
See, right. That's what they throw at us, and as Frank just answered all that. Go
but
ahead.
It doesn't matter, does it? Because whoever you vote for, you got to live with all the way across the spectrum, right? Yeah. If you voted for Hillary, then you have to live with everything, right? If you voted for Obama, you have to live with it. If you voted for George W. Bush, you got to live with it all the way across. So that doesn't just apply to Trump voters. It applies to everybody.
Yeah, and I one thing that has really bugged me, often you hear the criticism of the president's personality.
Right.
That, you know, from the evangelical community.
Right.
But I think the reality is they also don't like some of his policies.
Sure.
For instance.
Are you talking about the what we would call, how would you say, call these folks? The Russell Moore types?
Okay, I think
the never Trump evangelicals.
Trump evangelicals. For instance, they keep speaking up. They say Trump is against immigration or against immigrants.
Right.
That is a false statement. Just because he wants to secure our borders against illegal immigrants, that doesn't mean he's against immigration. Listen, folks, tens of thousands of people are still immigrating to this country every year since he's been elected president. On the refugee issue, they misrepresent the facts on that. Remember early on, He wanted to close down the number of refugees coming in from terrorist-sponsoring nations. And they tried to paint him as anti-Islamic or anti-Muslim. That's what they tried to do. That is false. There are still people coming into this country from Saudi Arabia.
But the Christian lefties, they are the ones who say these kinds of things.
Yes, sir.
And then they'll say, see there, Jackson, you voted for this guy. He's a bigot. He doesn't want any immigrants.
That's
so
right.
So it's a false narrative to begin with. Mm-hmm. You're listening to the radio program, Today's Issues on American Family Radio. And you said one thing. We're picking a CEO of a country, not a pastor, when we vote for a president. When you vote... At your church, folks, you have every right to demand doctrinal agreement, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. behavioral standards and all the other things that go along with leadership in your church, be you a deacon, elder, or pastor. However, when it comes to, you cannot apply that exact same standard to a public office, a civil, would we like those attributes to be exemplified by a candidate that we vote for? Absolutely. But you're talking about an office that is voted on by the general public. Guess what? The pagan has vote just like we can. Mm-hmm. So this isn't the same as inside a church or a denomination, for example. So we have to deal with that reality. So Christians, while a significant voting bloc, and President Trump could not have won without us, and by the way, 85% or 86% of the Christian public voted, at least the evangelical and conservative right. Catholics, voted for President Trump mm-hmm. because they saw exactly what Frank was talking
sure.
about,
yeah.
the differences that and what was at stake.
You know, Tim, I do think that Christians ought to call any president to task when they do something wrong, whether it's Trump or anybody else, though. We ought not be blind followers of anyone, right?
No.
We ought to say, hey, this is wrong. You shouldn't have done this. You shouldn't have done that. And so to a certain extent, I think we definitely have to be sure that we are telling the truth when Trump or any other president does something right or wrong.
Okay, but I got to tell you, maybe I'm the mm-hmm. only one here,
mm-hmm.
that... when dealing with these secular, progressive, liberal, whacked out Democrats, did I get all my adjectives?
That was good. That was very good.
I don't know if I want my president using the fruits of the Spirit as a measuring stick on how he treats them.
You want the bully who's going to beat up the bully who's going to beat you up.
We do. No, I think you can fight, but still be dignified in your fight. I think you can fight and still treat them as made in the image of God, just like everybody else.
Yeah.
But to say that you can never be aggressive when you fight, that's just false.
But I think that's the appeal of President Trump to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Is that, yes, he's going to do some things wrong along the way. But at least he is a fighter, and we haven't seen that in forever.
Sure.
For someone that's generally on our
right.
side.
Right.
Yeah. I think Christians have the wrong idea that you always have to be nice, and that's just not true. Right. Jesus wasn't nice when he overturned the tables in the temple. He wasn't nice in John chapter 8 when he said, your father is the devil. By the way, he was talking to politicians at the time, Pharisees, part of the Sanhedrin. He wasn't nice in Matthew 23 when he said, How can you avoid being condemned to hell, these people? He
yeah.
went after these people. Now, I'm not saying Trump and Jesus are exactly the same. They're not, obviously. I'm simply saying the idea that Christians always have to be nice isn't true. Sometimes you have to be a little bit aggressive with people to get your point across.
Yeah. President Trump is a human being like the rest of us, and he is going to... I'm surprised he hasn't, lashed out even more sometimes than he does because of the way he has been constantly bombarded by incoming missiles from the secular.
Yeah, I'm amazed he's still standing considering all the fire he's
taking. I think he's just built for this kind of thing.
He must be. It's incredible.
All right, Frank, take care, my friend.
God bless you guys.
Talk to you later.
See you.
That's a Dr. Frank Turek. Check out his website, Cross Examined. We shall return momentarily with more of Today's Issues.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Abraham Hamilton III.
I say this repeatedly, and I'm going to say it now, that we will never be able to out-politic to out public policy or even to out church deficiencies in the home.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. I am currently reading a book titled 1776 by David McCullough. I would highly recommend this book about our country's founding. It's been on my to-do list for 10 years, and I finally got around to it. But an excellent book it is, and a lot of it's about the life of George Washington. What an amazing story. Without George Washington, I doubt I would be talking to you today. That's how instrumental and important he was to our country's founding. He was a man used by God. We're going to be going to Mount Vernon, his home, on our Spiritual Heritage Tour in June and September. Our tours in June and September, Spiritual Heritage Tours to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon. And then we're going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate tour. For all the information, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. Again, that's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
For me, Truett means opportunities.
Truett means an adventure.
Place where I can grow and become more like Jesus.
This is somewhere I belong.
To me, Truett is like a home far away from home.
Everyone is family from all different walks of life and from all over the world.
To me, Truett means a second home.
Truett McConnell University is home for me.
Hi, this is Todd Starnes, and now you know why I love Truett McConnell University. Caleb Watson was known around his hometown of Enterprise, Alabama, as a natural-born leader. He was inspired to join the military by his uncle, a former Marine who served in Operation Desert Storm. Caleb was appointed to the Naval Academy. He became a wrestling coach and a small arms instructor. And it wasn't too long before he was named captain of the rifle team, had a reputation for helping others. So, when a Muslim terrorist opened fire inside a classroom at the Naval Air Station in Pensacola, Caleb ran towards the gunfire. He was shot 5 times, but he managed to convey important information about the shooter to the first responders. Caleb later died at the hospital. 2 other Navy sailors also lost their lives. Benjamin Watson said his son was willing to risk his life for his country, but they never thought he would die in Florida. Joshua Caleb Watson, 23 years old, an American hero. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Merry Christmas from Today's Issues.
Off my greatest hits collection, Christmas.
You really sound good, Tim.
Well,
you're different. Your voice is different.
I was a little that morning we recorded that. I had a cold. I didn't know how it was going to sound, but it was pure and clear. I think it worked out.
Came off well.
That's very good.
Is that? Can I be sued for that, Fred?
You mean that wasn't really the truth?
No, it was. It's a little shaded. all right. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Walker with Ray and Fred. I'm Tim Wildman. Walker, folks want to join us on the internet. How can they do that?
Yeah, a couple of different ways. You can check out our website, afr.net, afr.net. We're also on social media, YouTube and Facebook. Just type in Today's Issues on those platforms and you can find us there. We live stream the show each day, Monday through Friday, live stream the radio show.
Ray, I was asking you off the air, I was trying to remember what Frank said and how he said it. He said Trump is what now?
He's the bully that beats up on the bullies that have been beating up on you for 30 years. And all the conservatives go, amen. That's amen. Exactly right.
He's the man.
You know, one of the things about President Trump is in his personality style, and when he was running for the Republican nomination, and then when he ran for the general election against Hillary Clinton and shocked the world, literally shocked the world, is that he didn't, and when I say this, it's going to sound like a criticism, but it's a backhanded compliment, if you want to put it that way. I guess that's the way you'd phrase it. What I'm about to say is President Trump, then candidate Trump, did not know enough to stay away from Christians in the election process.
Yeah, he didn't get the memo.
Huh?
He didn't get the memo to ignore.
He didn't get the memo that we're the right-wing nut jobs that need to be distanced from.
Right.
That the Republican establishment always tries to tell us.
They want our votes.
The Republican establishment, they want the millions of votes that come along with, especially the evangelical Christians. But then they want. Then they show us where we can sit in the bus.
Right.
Mm-hmm. At the back.
At the back. Right.
At the very back, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we're like the embarrassment to them.
Yes.
You know, the pro-lifers, the Christians, the people who vote, and talk about
moral values.
Jesus and moral values, you know. So President Trump comes along, Donald Trump, he doesn't know who we are.
That's true.
He doesn't know who we are, right. And he doesn't know that he's not supposed to hang out with Robert Jeffress.
Right.
So he brings him up on stage to pray at all his events.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And whenever he did find out how much the left and the establishment hated us,
right,
he probably didn't care.
No, he didn't care. Didn't.
Right.
No, he didn't back down.
In fact, he invited thousands of us to New York City. You and I went, Walker.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You remember that?
Yep. In 2016.
You and I went. How many people were that? At least 1,000.
At least 1,000 evangelical
1,000
leaders.
And some Catholic leaders, too, mm-hmm. were there at one of those big.
It was at the Marriott.
In downtown Manhattan. Walker and I went. I think Ben Carson and Mike Huckabee hosted.
Yep.
And Donald Trump came up there and took all kind of questions left and right.
Yep.
And so I'm saying there he is in the middle of Manhattan, and he's surrounding himself with all these Christians. And then he's also talking about judges. He said, you're going to love the judges I appoint because I'm getting them off the Federalist Society list.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt President Trump even knew, quite frankly, who the Federalist Society was.
But he learned.
But he learned. Yeah. He learned. And I do think he has conviction about appointing the right kind of judges. Don't misunderstand me. I'm just saying that he was on a learning curve.
Sure.
The way he talked about, quote, the evangelicals, it sounded like we were monkey. He was at the zoo and we were looking at Monkey Island.
Right.
Hey, Melania, look out there. Look at those evangelicals.
Right. That's right.
They're our friends.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But he quickly became friends with a lot of evangelical leaders. And
he's kept it up.
And he's kept it up.
He's kept it up.
He hasn't done what most Republicans do.
Right.
Want the votes and then
see you later.
See you later. No, President Trump has had Christian leaders into the White House, myself included.
He put Mike Pence on the ticket with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mike Pompeo is Secretary of State.
Right. Mm-hmm.
My wife, Allison, thinks he understands. He sees now true Christians are very loyal.
Yes.
And
yes.
And those gentlemen I just mentioned are very loyal to him. Well, Sandy Rios joins us every Tuesday that she can. Sandy is Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association. That's our ministry. She has a radio program here each morning, Sandy Rios, in the morning from 7 to 8 o'clock Central Time here on AFR. And Sandy, good morning to you.
Good morning. Excuse me. Good morning right back to you.
Raisin,
I'm listening so intently, I'm losing my voice.
Yeah, Ray's in studio with us.
Hi, Sandy.
Hey, Ray. Lucky you.
Yeah, having a blast here.
Yeah, I bet you are.
Hey, Sandy, you heard what we were talking about. Donald Trump's relationship to especially evangelical Christians. What do you think about what we're discussing here?
Oh, you're spot on, Tim, because we've never had, meaning evangelicals, we've never had a better friend in the White House. And that's including President Reagan, who I really had a great admiration for, President Bush, who I really was fond of in his early years. I'm disappointed in him now, but they held us at arm's length. I mean, I think Reagan came the closest to President Trump, but the list is greater than the one you gave. I know you know that, but Mark Meadows, strong evangelical,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Is on the phone with President Trump all the time, and many other people that I know that maybe their names would not be known. And you know, there is also a cabinet.
Jay Sekulow is
Jay Sekulow, absolutely
right at the top of the lawyers.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Why don't you think that President Trump knows better than to stay away from us? We're supposed to be toxic, you know. We're supposed to be anathema.
He, I don't care what people say. I think he has always had, based on my knowledge of him going back quite a long way, he has an instinct for what's right, even though he did a lot of things that were wrong.
In his personal life, yeah.
Yeah, he must have had some really good input. You know, he's always, I don't think, I'm not claiming he was this like school or church kid, or, you know, choir boy, whatever. But I think he's had some good input. And he's had a sense of right and wrong for a long time. And and this is going to be really bizarre. I know this will go up on Media Watch. But I actually think that when a man in his position, who is a billionaire and can afford anything and have any woman in the world he wants, the fact that he actually marries, because you don't have to marry now. Why would you bother?
That's true.
The fact that he commits to marriage shows to me that he values marriage. And I know you could say he doesn't value it because he's been through three. But honestly, I think in a twisted way, it shows a desire to have that proper relationship with a woman. And so I think his instincts are good.
I heard him speak, President Trump, when he was candidate Trump at the Values Voters Summit about 4 years ago, I guess it was, it was the fall of the election, so 16. And he held up a Bible. He did not go to church. President Trump did not go to church in his adult years that I know of, at least on a regular basis. He may have gone Christmas, Easter, like a lot of people do, and that mm-hmm. kind of thing. But he held the Bible up, and he said, this is my mother's Bible.
Yes, that's correct.
That's right.
This is my mother's Bible, and you could tell he spoke with great affection about his mom. And he talked about how his mom used to take the children to Sunday school, and I guess church too. He mentioned Sunday school.
Presbyterian church.
At the Presbyterian church in Queens, I think it was, or Jamaica, or one of those boroughs that he was from, that he was raised in up there. And I'm thinking to myself, we all can look back, and if we were raised in the church, we remember those lessons we were taught, right?
Right.
Yep. By our Sunday school teachers, by our vacation Bible school teachers, by the pastor, maybe. And I'm thinking, to Sandy's point, of course, we're spiritually analyzing President Trump here from the outside, but there, you add a lot of things together, namely what you've said, Ray, about him surrounding himself with Christians. It makes me think, and to Sandy's point right there, that he has a affinity towards the things of God and the Bible. He hasn't lived by it all, in many ways, but that's true of a lot of Americans, right? But he does have a reverence. He's the kind of guy that would take off his hat.
Yeah.
You know, if he were wearing a hat and you were going to have a prayer, I think he was the type of guy who would take off his hat. So anyway, it's very interesting. This gentleman who is our president, who will be running again in 2020. Are you surprised at all, Sandy, that Donald Trump is running again? I kind of thought he might decide, hey, I don't need all this. I got $5 billion. And golf.
Right.
This is the thing that is missing in America's understanding of who he is. What a tremendous sacrifice. Who needs this? That was the point the first time around. The first time around, you could argue that it was perhaps, you know, an ego trip, kind of like a Mitt Romney, like these wealthy guys who, Bloomberg, you know, that's the mountain they have not climbed yet. And so you could argue that that might have driven his initial desire to be president. But after this nearly 4 years, who needs this? What family needs this? He doesn't take a salary. He donates his salary every month. He spends how many hours a day? I don't care what the media says. This man works. He must not sleep. I think I've mentioned before, I've known a few millionaires personally in my life, and the thing they had in common was that they didn't sleep much, maybe 4 hours a night. And I think that's what I think that's.
I think he, just, he no, he gets he has to get by on 5 or 6 at the most, because that's
right.
I mean, he's tweeting at 11 and tweeting at 4.
Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah. Yes. And so Tim, my point of course is that this is a man who's making a tremendous sacrifice, and when he says in these rallies that he is he's fighting for us, I believe him.
Right.
I believe him.
Right.
His family fortune has not increased. As far as I know, it certainly has not expanded, because they've had to not, you know, invest overseas. Everything's under scrutiny. They've had so many lawsuits. It's just trouble. Who needs it? His daughter's clothing line had to be shut down, you know. They've paid a tremendous price, that family, in so many ways. So if I were him, I'm not sure I wouldn't just say, you know what? You can have this. Especially your Republicans who are not supporting me. Go ahead. You take it over.
But he's not. Yeah.
And that's something that we should admire and respect.
Yeah.
And
Fred?
Yeah, he's authentic. That's what I like about him. He's authentic.
Yep.
I mean, there's no pretend. He's not trying to be somebody else. He is who he is.
And what you see is what you get, right?
And I think the American people are just ready for a president like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom line. Sandy, since you got off the air this morning, Nancy Pelosi, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, flanked by Gerald Nadler, Adam Schiff, came out and they announced their two articles of impeachment, abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. I want to get your reaction to that. But first, I want to play a clip. It's clip number 8, Brent. This is former Whitewater prosecutor Robert Ray, interviewed after this morning, saying Democrats have misread the Constitution on what constitutes high crimes and misdemeanors. Cut number 8.
Neither one of those is a high crime or misdemeanor. So we have now passed through an investigation over the course of the last several months where it's not treason, it's not bribery, it's not extortion, it's not an illegal foreign campaign contribution. It is now whatever a majority of the House of Representatives controlled by the Democrats say it is, which is abuse of power, abuse of conduct, and an interbranch dispute between the executive branch and the legislative branch that is subject to ongoing litigation before the courts that the Democrats are not prepared to wait for a final order from. The text of the Constitution at least make it apparent to me, but apparently not to the House Judiciary Committee, that the Constitution requires both that it be a high crime and misdemeanor, and that that high crime, the high part of crime, be abuse of power. And they seem to have now separated out crime and removed that from the Constitution and just want to focus on the aspect that constitutes the second component, which is abuse of power.
Sandy, do you think the Democrats are going to get away with this?
You know what? It's, I want to say no, of course, because it's just so wrong. I mean, it's just unbelievable that we're watching. It's the sense that we all have. It's that sense of justice. Now, this is justice. It's when we want to see the right thing take place, when we want to see people who are perpetrating lies, who are trying to destroy other people unfairly, we want to see that stopped. So that part of me just says, no, they can't. It can't happen. But the other part of me knows I've lived too long. I've seen, and all of us have, so much injustice that I cannot say for sure that they will not prevail. For instance, I don't know if Nancy Pelosi has the votes. I'm looking. I don't know if you go to Fox News and look at that still shot of them in the press conference, if you look at the countenance on their faces, Nancy Pelosi, Maxine Waters, Gerald Nadler, I don't know a couple of them, and then Adam Schiff, they look so dreadful. They look like a sense of dread. They do not look like those gloating, wild-eyed, smirking people that we've seen so often. They know that this is not a done deal. They know that themselves. And that they may have gotten way out over their shoes, you know, on this. But I don't know, Fred. I don't know, because we know that there's so much wickedness, and we know that the media, I've never seen them lose. In my lifetime, I've never seen them fail to destroy someone. I haven't.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they fail, ultimately, to destroy President Trump and further. Again, it is about us. Mm-hmm. We are his supporters because we support the principles he is embracing. Those are our principles. Yeah. So it's a war against us too. So I don't know, but I think the optimistic and part of me says there's no way, they're going to get away with this.
Yeah. There was a report that in 1999, Maxine Walters did smile. I can't confirm that.
Right. That's just the report.
It's out there.
Right.
We
heard
there.
It.
How many sources do you have?
It's out there on the internet. She was one of the sour grapes that Sandy's talking about. I'm looking at the picture on Fox News that Sandy's talking about. Yeah.
See what I mean? I mean, even Adam Schiff, he's not gloating, and his eyes are closed. That's weird. You know, usually they are really wide open. And so are Nancy's.
Yeah.
They don't look so happy. So that should tell us a lot.
I'm not a big advocate of cosmetic surgery, but I don't know. You might want to. Anyway.
You're saying somebody should consider.
I'm just saying you might want to consider.
I should say something else, too, because substantive, rather than just hunches. But John Durham, the prosecutor who has convened a grand jury and came out really just surprised the heck out of us, including me. I made the statement that we told the Inspector General some weeks ago that we do not agree with his findings. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be coming out with his report. Hey. And I believe that these people, these key people like Comey, who's preening, Andrew McCabe, who's preening right now, they're going to be in trouble.
Okay,
I believe they are.
Can you hang with us 5 more minutes, Sandy?
Sure.
Okay, you're talking to Sandy Rios. She's our guest this half hour. I'm Tim with Ray Walker and Fred. Go around the table here, but I want Fred to set this up because we were at our prep meeting this morning. You made a point that I hadn't thought about, Fred, because yesterday the news was being reported that the Inspector General Horowitz, his report was released yesterday, supposedly an independent analysis of what happened at the Justice Department that led to the Russia hoax investigation. And You pointed out that the IG,
Horowitz said there was no bias in the investigation,
right.
But then he said, and I'm quoting here from Horowitz's report, we identified at least 17 significant errors,
17
errors or omissions in the Carter Page FISA applications, and many additional errors in the Woods procedures. Here's the point: every error went against Trump. 17 errors and omissions.
Right.
17 in a row.
Right.
And there's no bias. Walker, go ahead.
Yeah, and the no bias line that Horowitz conveniently added like a few pages into the 500 pages, he added this one line, very clear, we could not find any political bias, blah, blah, blah. Well, political bias is very hard to prove. It's like proving motive. But you can look at the facts and the way things were done to then lead to a conclusion about political bias with their text messages about how they hate Trump supporters, et cetera, et cetera. But the important thing is that there was the initial FISA application, and then there were 3 renewals, so 4 total applications. Every single one of the applications excluded the 17 key facts that would completely undermine the entirety of the application. And so the FBI agents and the officials intentionally withheld key evidence that would completely shut down the entire investigation. They withheld it. Why? Because the FISA court would not approve an application in which there were key facts undermining the whole purpose of the application.
And Walker, let me just add that they're very excellent. And to make the point, let's assume that they thought when they applied for the first FISA that, oh, that Carter Page, he's working with the Russians, and we got to get to the bottom of this. So they throw in, the dossier, which now allegedly, according to the Michael Horowitz, they had no idea was faked. It was just legitimate to them. Now, I'm a layperson. I read it. I knew it was tabloid ridiculousness, but the FBI agents on this case thought it was serious. So they used it. Let's say they didn't know. Gee, they just didn't know. Okay, so the next 3 FISAs, they knew. By then, I guarantee you, they knew that Christopher Steele hated Trump. They knew that the stuff came from the Clintons. They knew all about all of that. They knew also a lot of facts that we can't go into about Carter Page that were just not true and part of the FISA. They never added the other evidence. They never removed the dossier. They just kept filing it. And the people that signed those FISAs are the ones that are going to be, I think, in the crosshairs. That would be Comey, McCabe, Rosenstein, and...
Sally Yates.
Sally Yates. So they knowingly falsified. The Woods regulation, whatever that is, Woods is the word, they are supposed to... And Bruce was... My husband was one of the FBI agents who went into that secret court and delivered that information. And they had to verify every time they went before the FISA court, they had to be able to verify every single thing in their application.
Yeah, because you're talking about spying on an American citizen.
Yeah.
Yes. One time, Bruce would tell you that they rejected an application he brought in, at least temporarily, until they described a make and model of a car, but not the color. And they would not accept the warrant. They would not issue the warrant until he went back and got the color of the car. That's how particular and meticulous the FBI used to be.
Hmm. Ray, go ahead.
We're left with a situation here where, Tim, either you have to conclude political bias or you have to say these people are the most sloppy and unengaged people in history. And I think it is more credible to believe that they did what they, those 17 mistakes didn't happen by chance.
Yes.
The fact, Walker, great point, they were intentionally left out. They knew what they were doing, right?
Yes.
It's a sad day because the FBI is filled with a lot of good men and women, but this is a terrible black mark.
Yeah. And what we've seen, I'm really disappointed in Michael Horowitz. I think he's part of the deep state. And Christopher Wray, the current head of the FBI, kind of whitewashing this. Oh, we're going to do some training with these guys to kind of really bring them up to speed on how to do this stuff. Do they really expect the American people to believe that?
The proper response, and maybe President Trump can do this because he's in charge. Mm. Maybe the proper response, anyone who touched that document, anyone who reviewed that document, signed that document, added false information to that document, left out it, key information, anyone who touched it, that's still at the FBI should be fired and their pension should be pulled. Mm-hmm. That's what happens when you're fired. That's why Andrew McCabe was fired. There may not be prosecutorial legal recourse because a lot of this is FBI rules and not law. But at a minimum, anyone still at that department that played a part in this should be out tomorrow.
Is Christopher Wray in that?
He wasn't there when this stuff happened.
No. Okay.
Yeah, but I'm sure you've seen that President Trump is calling out Chris Wray now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I'm telling you, that's like music to my ears because this is not a good sign for Chris Wray. I can tell you right now. And I just hope the president will take him out of there and put someone in.
A.G. Barr and the fella he appointed.
John Durham.
John Durham, the prosecutor from... Connecticut, the U.S. attorney, I guess he is. Mm-hmm. They came out yesterday and said, we don't agree with Horowitz. We got what they're saying is we got the goods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're coming.
And Christopher Wray let off his snarky press release yesterday with this investigation was properly predicated. Which goes completely contrary to his boss, Attorney General Barr.
Exactly.
Horowitz and Durham.
Yep. Absolutely.
And back to Comey, too, again.
So we just keep praying for justice, really.
As I said yesterday, all I needed to know was that the FBI did not put Hillary Clinton under oath about the server doing United States government, State Department business out of her bathroom server to avoid congressional oversight, and the FBI goes to just chat about it. Doesn't even put her under oath for a couple hours at her house. Then you knew they were all in for Hillary. We'll be back in 5 minutes. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.